Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Blog Talk Radio proudly brings to you its journalistic integrity and wrestling analytics, Tag Team Champions of the World, the Professor Fernando Uribe, the PR Superstar Patrick Rivera, and we are Working the Marks. Welcome, everyone, to Working the Marks. How you doing? It's Pat. Happy to be with you again. I had to go a little extra on the intro, Professor. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and again, congrats to the state, to the Garden State, as there is more to smoke in the garden, apparently, now with legal weed. So cheers to everybody with legal cannabis.
That's a pop. You hear that?
There you go.
Yeah. I never give you pops, so, you know, remember that.
There you go. All right.
How you doing, man? How you been? Good?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Just glad to see this weather getting a lot warmer and lots to talk about in the world of professional wrestling / sports entertainment.
That's right. That's right. So any news we got in the cycle this week, Professor?
Well, in a very anticlimactic type of display this past week on Dynamite, which, by the way, for the AEW fans, still not cracking a million at 930,000 this week, Tony Khan came out to the stage, and as he was about to announce a AEW New Japan Pro Wrestling Super Show, he was interrupted by Adam Cole and kind of, you know, plug it there for the AEW president / GM / booker that AEW and New Japan bring to you the Forbidden Door coming up on Sunday, June the 26th on pay-per-view out of Chicago, the United Center. I don't know, man. That was kind of, you know, we had seen it in the dirt sheets, some rumors, but obviously the New Japan president joining Tony Khan stage, something maybe we'd never expected, bro.
Well, I got to be honest, man. I thought this shit was going to happen a while ago. I think the pandemic was the only reason that this thing didn't happen sooner. But you know that given their working relationship with New Japan, more specifically a lot of the big name talent that was there, that's been dying to go and wrestle in New Japan, you know, as soon as I think they could get around to it in regards to, you know, regulations and everything else, we were going to get to this point. So I think it's smart that, you know, they do it over here first. You know, you want to milk it. You want to get as much as you can. But, you know, I got a lot of concerns. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Even though it's going to be in the States, I do have a lot of concerns, particularly about the card, the booking of the card. And look, I know a lot of the marks are going to get, you know, up in arms about this stuff. I know some of the fans are going to get up in arms about this, and pretty much the whole wrestling community, you know, at least the ones that like AEW. But I don't have a whole hell of a lot of faith in Tony Khan booking a solid card, or really kind of booking a solid main event. How do you feel about it?
Well, first thing, number one, listen, it was nice to see, you know, Jay White come out on the stage and interrupt Tony Khan right after Adam Cole introduced him. Oh, the Switchblade. We talk about too sweet, Jay White, baby. The Switchblade. You know, the leader of Bullet Club coming out on stage, you know, and kind of maybe teasing a little bit of the Undisputed Elite maybe facing the Bullet Club at Forbidden Door. I don't know about you. Obviously, I'm a fan. You know, I love watching Impact Wrestling. So, hey, it was great to see Jay White out there. And if we're going to see Bullet Club against the Undisputed Elite, I don't know, man. That could be a nice match. I don't have a lot of faith in the booking, like you say, and I agree with you. But I think, listen, when marks get on Vince McMahon, for WrestleMania being too long, and now it's split into 2 days. Let's be honest. If you really want to do this show justice, folks, you got to make this show 5-6 hours. You got to be able to parade a lot of talent out there, maximize it, you know, get them out in the ring, maximize, you know, the time in the States, the exposure. I'm sorry, you know, if you want a good card, or at least a lengthy, thorough one, this needs to be 5-6 hours. That's not my, well, some people want to hear, Pat, but I think if you really, really want to do justice to both companies, it's got to be a long show, bro.
Well, I mean, look, his pay-per-views are anywhere between 4 to 5 hours. I mean, the last one, I thought for what it was, there was some good stuff on it, but for the most part, it was just entirely too long. By the end of the show, after seeing pretty much, you know, the only guys that I'm interested in there, you know, I was done with it. I was done with it. I was tired. I was like, you know, I don't even care about the main event. Plus, you know, I kind of figured at that point that, you know, Paige was going to retain, but we'll talk about that later on. But I mean, the runtime on these pay-per-views, you know, they go a little long, and you got to anticipate that this is going to be at least a 5-hour show. I know it sounds ridiculous. 4 hours is kind of even ridiculous, but you got to anticipate that there's going to be at least a 5-hour show. And I know a lot of people gave Vince a lot of criticism for, you know, putting the Andre the Giant over the top rope Invitational Memorial Battle Royal on Friday instead of putting it on the WrestleMania card. Well, there's a reason why he does that, because he's trying to promote more shows, and he's trying to consolidate the time over the 2 days for the things that he felt mattered and were going to get attention and notoriety. You know, Khan, I don't think he's going to do that with Rampage. I don't even think he's going to book a special Saturday show. I don't think he's going to do any of that. I don't even know if the pay-per-view is on a Saturday or Sunday, but point being,
it is on a Sunday coming up. It is on a Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Well, imagine that. 5 hours you're probably going to have to dedicate, you know? And he's not going to start it at like 7, like, you know, would make sense. He's going to start it at 8, you know? So I just think that, I'm kind of worried that it's going to drop. I like the idea. I think it's good. There's a lot of talent in AEW that could benefit working with New Japan and vice versa. But I'll say this much. If Tony Khan does not book Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada in the main event, this card could be a waste. And I know it sounds crazy, but it could be, because what's the point if you're not going to have the two best wrestlers in the world, arguably, competing against each other? You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm with you, man. Again, listen, but I think what we've learned about Tony Khan in 3 years is the potential for good matchmaking is there. However, the execution, subsequently the booking, does not live up to what we believe is the great matchmaking. Not to say it's always great matchmaking, but for the most part, let's be honest. You know, we look at whether it's pay-per-views, we look at Dynamites and Rampages, even last week's Battle of the Belts too. I mean, on paper, okay, some good matches, you could say, but the booking, man, is going to be lackluster. And let's be honest, you know, if Tony Khan's going to be the person, I guess, that's going to be the most influential in this. Again, I don't know what the New Japan Pro Wrestling president is going to have in this showcase. I mean, how much input he's going to have on the booking. But again, you know, the body of work is there. It's not like let's see what Tony does. We know what Tony does. We've seen what Tony does. I mean, that's the concern that fans have, whether it's this New Japan show or, again, the merger, or Tony Khan purchasing Ring of Honor. For all intents and purposes, you know, the next time Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view, whether it's 2, 3, 4 hours, you're kind of concerned that Tony Khan, you know, what kind of shows he's going to put on. And that's the big, big, I think, criticism a lot of fans, at least fans that are intellectually honest, have.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think, too, to some extent, this is kind of like a rehash of, like, previous Ring of Honor and New Japan merger shows. Or super shows that they've booked. You know, now they just have a lot of the newer guys from AEW, a lot of the high spot guys from there. And obviously the inclusion of Bryan Danielson and CM Punk. But I mean, the Briscoes, I'm sure, will do great. That'll be good that they can include the Ring of Honor guys in it. That'll be nice. You know, it'll also give a lot of indie guys a chance to work with those guys. But I don't know. I don't know. I have my concerns. But, I mean, look, I'll even take Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. if you just somehow get to Okada versus Danielson at Wrestle Kingdom. Fine. You know what I mean? I'm cool with that. Like, but you have to have that match at some point in time, you know? And I just think that right now it seems like Tony Khan is really marking out for Hangman, really marking out for Punk. That's the big matchup that he wants to have. And I'm sure it's going to be a good match, but it's just, it's all too flat. It's all too, like, the heat's not there, man. You know, there's no sizzle. There's really even no steak. You know, it's a vegan steak, you know, and I'm a vegan. So, you know, it's like, it's just, it's not, there's nothing there. But if they book Punk and Okada, I just think it's a waste. I'm sorry. Like, Punk doesn't deserve to be in there with Okada. He just doesn't.
Well, it is the United Center. It is Chicago. And if there's a place that's going to be buzzing, it's going to be Chicago, which seems to be almost, bro, let's be honest. It seems like the United Center is AEW's Madison Square Garden. That's their holy ground.
Yeah.
That's their Mecca, which is fine. You know, it's a nice arena. I've been there. It's nice, but...
I just can't buy it. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't buy the whole Punk thing. I really can't. Like, you know, when he came in, it was cool. He got the pop, fine. He wrestled Darby, even though I don't think he should have, you know. And then you have him wrestle these nobodies, you know. And realistically, in the eyes of, like, you know, making money, in the sense of making money, you know, these guys are nobodies. Nobody knows who they are. Marks know who they are. But, you know, people that are actually going to make you money don't know who these guys are. And, you know, again, like, people didn't wait 7 years for Punk to come back and wrestle these kids. They wanted to see Punk do some hot shit. They wanted to see Punk and Moxley. They wanted to see Punk and Omega, Punk and Bryan again. Why not? You know what I'm saying? They wanted to see hot stuff. They wanted to see Punk teaming with somebody, maybe teaming with Darby Allin against the Young Bucks. Do hot shit. Have Punk do hot shit. Have him talk shit. But instead, you know, they just did this whole, like, passive, you know, grateful Punk thing, and now he's a Bret Hart wannabe, and, like, I don't know, I've lost all interest. So, like, if he's going to be in the main event of that show, that's really doing nothing for me, I'll be honest, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's
I
right.
just feel like
that's
Tony
right.
Khan lets his markdom of certain wrestlers dictate his booking really to his detriment, you know?
No, listen, you're absolutely right, dude, and I would just say that Listen, going back real quick to the length issue, I mean, it's a Sunday. It's not a holiday weekend, okay? Double or Nothing next month is Memorial Day weekend. Whether or not fans are going to be watching it at home, again, it's a holiday weekend, especially, again, coming out of COVID, right? Since it seems like we're back to a sense of normalcy, I think people want to be out. People want to be away, perhaps, for the holiday weekend. I don't know. You know what? I'm sure the attendance will be there in Las Vegas, you would think. But for those watching at home, I mean, hey, a 4 or 5 hour show. Listen, AEW Revolution in March last month was almost, I think this show went a little over midnight, if I'm not mistaken. I remember, I think it was like maybe 12:15-ish, 12:20 once the main event finished, you know, was completed. Listen, it may not be a big deal Memorial Day weekend for Double or Nothing, but in late June, and I get it, maybe kids are out of school already, some people are on vacation, it's still a long show, man, on a Sunday night, and you anticipate that if you want to get everybody out there that you need to get out there to help make, put, you know, help push this product, you got to make it lengthy, and I'm not sure if fans are going to be ready for that.
Well, you know, here's the thing, the guy has two shows that he could use. 3 hours worth of television. So if he really, you know, between now and then utilizes his time well and really books things that are compelling that set up a strong pay-per-view, in their case, it's a pay-per-view, not a premium live event, they can have a more condensed, satisfying show instead of trying to do every little fucking nook and cranny, throwing the sink in there and then making it 5 hours long. Like, No, that's not digestible for an audience. I'm sorry. It's just not. But thankfully, we have a lot of time between now and then, and I think that Khan has a lot on his plate, and let's see how he handles it, you know. But we'll be moving on in the show here. Professor, what are your biggest takeaways in this week in wrestling?
Well, I'll say this, man. Once again, the rating came out. Well, we saw the rating last week for the main event on Rampage, a special 7 p.m. start time. I think that feud is done between AEW World Champion Hangman Page and Adam Cole. You know, I'm a big Adam Cole fan. I was hoping Cole would win the belt. That was not the case. Certainly, I think the rating was somewhere in the 500,000 range. And the next night on Battle of the Belts 2, it was the same thing. You know, originally back in January, you had like, I think, a 700,000 plus rating for that inaugural show, and it dropped considerably to the early 500,000s. Wow. And that's not great. And obviously this past week on Dynamite, once again, it failed to crack a million. So when people like Vince Russo take to Twitter this week, and the usual Lollipop Guild of Alvarez and Meltzer and the rest of the Lollipop Guild, you know, the Vinny Craig, you know, Jimmy and Jack show that they do on Wrestling Observer Live, yeah, they can make excuses all they want, but once again, 930,000 people watch Dynamite. And for as bad as Raw can be, which this past week's Raw wasn't terrible, you know, that wedding scene wasn't for me, but, you know, again, I mean, that's comedy that doesn't really appeal to me per se. But by the same token, Tony Khan's version of comedy, which includes Danhausen, which is absolutely atrocious, is not moving the needle. So, you know, once again, AEW fans can talk all they want. They can make excuses. Well, it's the NBA playoffs, baseball's on, whatever else excuse. Guess what? Raw is still drawing 1.6. I think the rating this week was 1.65, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's a drop-off after Mania, which the day after Mania was like 2.1, I believe. But let's be honest, Vince still knows what he's doing booking-wise. He may not be booking to every single member of the audience, but he's booking to the right audience that is tuning in, that's buying merch, and making money subsequently. And I think that Tony Khan needs to smarten up, because once again, you're not drawing a million. You should be. If you're a company that supposedly is trying to become more mainstream, Pat, numbers aren't there, and AEW Mark's got to really come to reality. But that's a hard struggle for some fans.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, I get it. They're all invested. They're very emotional. We've spoken about it in previous episodes. I just think that, you know, Tony Khan has made a lot of mistakes with the booking of his championship, with his main events, and not putting the championship on people that are going to generate interest. And I get it. He's trying to be loyal to Hangman. He's trying to, you know, I guess what fans would always say that they would do if they were bookers, you know. But there's a reason why fans don't book. And there's a reason why people who are professional who have been in the business book, unless your dad's a billionaire, you know, then you throw that out the window. But point being that Tony Khan just needs to do more, needs to put his big pieces out on Front Street for everybody to see so that they can come to AEW, so that they can start watching it. And look, a lot of people are going to talk shit about Impact. AEW fans can talk shit about Impact all they want, how they booked and all the other stuff. But Impact booked in a way that got attention. Impact also had the balls to go head-to-head with Vince, you know, which – I don't think AEW really wants any of that. Like, they talk a big game, and they'll do their little bullshit, you know, YouTube thing, but they don't want the smoke with Vince, not just yet. But Impact, they put their money in their mouth where their mouth was, and they went after it. You know what I mean? And Impact's booking was a lot better because you had wrestling people. You know, then, unfortunately, later on, you know, certain egos, whatever, derailed all that. But Impact's been able to survive because – even for the stupid things that they do, they generally tend to make wrestling sense. And
hey,
they
20
understand.
Years, man.
Yeah.
20 years.
You can't, look, you can't knock them. You can't knock them. You're hearing this right, folks. I'm giving Impact credit. I am putting Impact over, okay? And I've laughed at Impact at times, but I'm putting Impact over. because Impact at least makes wrestling sense with what they do. They just do. They make more wrestling sense overall than anything AEW does. And to your point, in regards to ratings, one of my takeaways this week is Raw really falling flat after the WrestleMania momentum. Even with, you know, the night after WrestleMania Raw, that was pretty flat. You know what I mean? A lot of it also had to do with the fact that you didn't have the European fans in the crowd because of the travel restrictions, which is probably why the attendance in that stadium there in Dallas didn't go over, you know, 100,000, or at least close to it. You know, but just the program itself, I mean, you know, you had the Cody thing, he was coming in hot, you know, that was a big moment. You know, you had all these matches, you had Steve Austin, you had Vince, you had everybody coming out of WrestleMania. There was a lot of intrigue from that first night and even the second night to some extent. But, you know, that Raw after WrestleMania was pretty flat. And then the one after, you know, they had a couple good matches, but overall it was just pretty flat. And I was really kind of disappointed because I thought they would have capitalized a little bit more on their momentum. And, you know, it's the program. The program's been there. It's not fantastic. It's not amazing, but it's there. And they had an opportunity to be a little bit more than just there. And I kind of feel like they dropped the ball with that. Any other takeaway for you?
Pat, real quick, just getting back to the WrestleMania attendance. Sure. I mean, you're absolutely right about the fact that European fans from Latin America also were not able to travel in. But can we just, like, kind of talk about the elephant in the room real quick? How about just the fact that, hey, people in general are still trying to recover financially from this pandemic. And domestically speaking, hey, it was a long weekend of wrestling, and there wasn't any shortage of wrestling in the Dallas area. You had WrestleCon, obviously, those independent shows. You had literally a full 4 days of WWE content, from the Hall of Fame to SmackDown to NXT Stand and Deliver to Two Nights of Mania and Raw on Monday night. Hey, how about just the notion that maybe people financially aren't there where they were maybe pre-pandemic. Maybe people's disposable income is slowly but surely maybe recovering to where it was. I mean, again, listen, case in point, last fall, we had a show at the Prudential Center in September. Then we had a show at the Garden right on September 11th, right on the 20th anniversary. We had a show on Prudential Center the week after. We had a show in Long Island by AEW the next month in October. We had Survivor Series in Brooklyn. We had another show. How about just there's a lot of wrestling and maybe people can't afford to go. I don't mean this as a slight, but maybe people are just being judicious with their income right now until it gets back to normal. I think people got to take that into account when it comes to attendance. And that's not being harsh. That's just saying, hey, we're not making an excuse, but let's be a little logical here, please, when it comes to about fandom, okay? We saw it with the NFL. We saw it with the NBA. We've seen it with baseball. And they're all different problems in different organizations. But the bottom line is that, hey, people are just trying to get back to normal, and maybe wrestling isn't a priority. You know, can someone maybe say that out loud? Maybe, you know what I'm saying?
No, you know what? You're absolutely right, and you know, I'm with you on it because nobody really takes the time to think about that. Nobody takes the time to say, hey, you know what? We're coming out of a pandemic. You know, things are expensive, cost of living, all these other things. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you kind of look at it and you say to yourself, hey, you know, if I could just save a couple of bucks staying home, even though I want to go. You know, I'll put it on the big screen. I'll get some snacks. I'll hang out with family, hang out with friends. You know, that's pretty understandable. And I think that when people want to criticize, you know, wrestling attendance, and this goes for both companies, you know, people don't really consider the fact that, you know, we've been through a lot as a country, as a world, as a planet. And you know, people, you know, I wouldn't fault them for trying to be frugal and look out for themselves. Professor, any other takeaways in this week?
I would just say that, again, you know, the way you look at these shows, and again, you know, Battle of the Belts 2, a significant drop off from January. I believe the next one's going to be in July. It's a quarterly event. Let's be honest. It's kind of resembling Clash of the Champions back in the old NWA, WCW days. And I understand the purpose of what the show represents, but again, it's a Saturday night. It's the NBA playoffs. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, people are watching baseball. People are watching other things. There's UFC. You know, shows like this, it's kind of tricky, man. And I wish that, again, I think this is where Tony Khan is reminding us all that he lacks self-awareness. You need to be a little more judicious in when you're scheduling the show. And I understand, like, when is there a good time? I get it. You can't do it during the day. There's the NBA playoffs, okay? Guess what? Maybe here in the New York area, the hockey teams aren't anything to cheer for, but the NHL, the Stanley Cup playoffs begin next weekend. So there's a lot of stuff to compete against when it comes to, you know, believe it or not, next weekend is the NFL draft. You might not care about the length of it. I might not care, but people watch that. And so, again, I think Tony Khan is in a bit of a pickle when it comes to his programming because, again, you know, you can book a trios match that's taking place everywhere from the parking lot to the public library across the street from the arena, and it's still not drawing a million. And, you know, again, I don't take a million point 01 or a million point one seriously. And, you know, they can't even do that consistently. And I think that's a real indictment about Tony Khan not having enough good wrestling people backstage to help him, not guide him, but to help him. And I think, again, that's a product of ego. That's a product of a lack of prioritization and a lack of, sort of compartmentalizing how to book wrestling when there's a lot on your plate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think they've proven that when they book interesting things with stars, it draws. You know what I mean? It's stuff that goes over a million. For whatever reason, you know, they just haven't been able to duplicate that success. And I think Tony Khan really needs to take a look at himself and needs to realize what he's doing. I mean, look, back in the day, you had the NHL playoffs, you had the NFL playoffs, you still had all this stuff. And wrestling still would draw a good number. And people would tune in to watch because they had stars and because they promoted them as such. I think to some extent, Khan feels like because this is WCW 2.0 and he's booking these guys as the main eventers, as the stars, the fans are just going to tune in because that's what it is. No, fans tune in because they want to see CM Punk. They want to see Bryan Danielson. They want to see Jon Moxley, Chris Jericho, Sting. What do all those guys have in common? They're guys that have worked at other companies, big companies. You know, they're guys who've been world champions for the most part. You know, yeah, they're all champions. So, I mean, like, people are going to tune in to see those guys because they're names. So put the names in the main event. Stop trying to just insist on pushing your guys because they're your guys and you feel like it's messed up to, you know. No, look, you got to ride the wave. That's entertainment. Some things are hot. Some things are working. Even in sports, certain players are just playing in a certain way. They're in a certain form. You have to bench a superstar. That's just what it is. But ride the wave, feel the momentum, go with it, and get it to where it needs to go. Another one of my takeaways this week, actually,
Real quick, not to interrupt you real quick, but just a takeaway. And for fans, obviously, in the tri-state area, you know, speaking of shows that create nostalgia, right? I mean, if Battle of the Belts is trying to resurrect a nostalgia for Clash of the Champions back in the old NWA, WCW, hey, there's still tickets available coming up next Saturday, May 7th, where, you know, Saturday night's main event emanates from our state capital here in New Jersey, folks, in at the Cure Insurance Arena in Trenton, Saturday night's main event. And, you know, listen, I wish Vince would pay the royalties to Animotion and use the old Obsession theme from the 80s. But, again, that's just me being a nostalgia freak. But it's nice to see Saturday night's main event coming back next weekend in Trenton. And then, obviously, it'll be on the network somehow on Peacock. And it'll air. It seems like one of those, again, those glorified house shows that we all grew used to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I feel like glorified house show does a disservice to what the guys and the girls do. You know, I think it's definitely, I would like to call it a themed house show. I think that's better. because those guys are still going to work their tails off. You know, it's a Saturday night. People are paying money to be there to see them. They're not at a bar drinking or at a restaurant or at a movie. They're there to watch wrestling. So they're obviously going to give it their best effort. But yeah, man, I just think it's just a matter of just making things more important. And again, featuring your stars, doing your thing, and kind of, you know, getting it so that people consistently tune in. You know what I mean?
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
So, another one of my I feel like I got lost there for a second. I'm sorry about that.
No problem, yeah.
So NXT, that was another one of my takeaways. NXT, I got to be honest, man, they've been quietly putting together some good content. And they've been quietly putting together a roster of potential stars in the future. You know, people are going to talk smack on all this stuff. People are going to talk smack on NXT. But again, 10, you know, 12 years ago, people were tuning in to watch these people that eventually became stars on the main roster. And I just feel like the current crop of NXT is no different. Grayson Waller, you know, Bron Breakker, you know, Joe Gacy, Nikita Lyons. I mean, these are people that you can see being on the main roster. You know, the Joe Gacy gimmick, I don't know if you've checked it out. It's fantastic. And that's stuff that's going to get heat. That's just going to get heat, especially nowadays. Hopefully they don't alter it too much, because you can get away with doing that type of gimmick. And you can get away with you know, executing it, but you just, it's how you do it. It's really how you do it, you know, at least on the main roster as far as that goes. So, yeah, folks, if you're out there, check out NXT more often, because there's going to be a lot of great matches that are coming out of there. And this has been a while. I mean, this is even going back to the Wednesday Night Wars. NXT was pumping out a lot of good stuff. And people are going to go back and look at this stuff and be like, wow, this is great. We were too busy shitting on it. So, you know, do the same with NXT, folks. And do the same with Impact, too. All right? See? I'm putting Impact over.
Oh, okay.
You hear that?
Very nice. Which, by the way,
check
folks,
out
tomorrow
Impact.
Tomorrow night is Rebellion on pay-per-view, which I'll be watching free online, but on my smart TV in my living room. But good card for Rebellion, since Pat wants to put over Impact. I got to take advantage of these moments, folks. They don't come too often. Pat, real quick, to your point about NXT, and I think we've said this on other episodes, and I say it all the time to friends of mine from grad school that are big pro wrestling fans, I really have to laugh at the outrage or, oh, I don't like what NXT is doing. I don't like what Vince is doing with NXT. These stars don't do anything for me. I would bet you one of my Dallas Cowboys jerseys, and I would burn them right in front of you, which I'm sure you would really,
ooh,
really relish.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I totally love that.
That I am sure if you ask these same guys, these same girls, these same fans 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when NXT was on YouTube, again, this is years before the WWE Network, which I really prefer,
yeah,
more than the Peacock, but, you know, hardcore fans were watching it on YouTube. And guess what? 10 years ago, they were looking at guys named Tyler Black. That name may not mean much to a lot of people, but guess what? You know, he was one of the, you know, he was the first FCW champion, a former NXT champion, went on to become Seth Rollins. You know, they had other guys like, you know, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. So for all this gibberish I hear about fans kind of defecating on NXT 2.0 and saying, oh, I can't believe this, why are we being subjected to this? Well, guess what? A lot of the stars we're enjoying today that are on the main roster were on NXT 10 years ago. And guess what? At the time, Triple H, William Regal, and the Hierarchy had to kind of go through a little process of elimination, see, hey, what guys and girls are getting over. And, you know, eventually we see some stars emanating from here. And that's what we've seen. So to fans that are just bitching and moaning online about, oh, I don't like what 2.0 is doing, listen, you got to break some eggs. You got to, you know, get guys and girls out there, see how they work, and see what gimmicks are over with fans, because Vince's vision of NXT is very different now. He's looking for younger athletes. He's looking for guys and girls that are not just the prototypical indie wrestlers, pro wrestlers. He's looking for athletes, collegiate stars, of all different sports, right? Like Tiffany Stratton's a former gymnast. We have guys who are former amateur wrestlers. And guess what? They're going to the Performance Center. They're putting their time in. And Vince is giving them a platform and a viewing audience to see who can, you know, not to say they're throwing people to the deep end of the pool, but seeing who can swim. And I bet you in about 2 or 3 years, I bet you by the time it's WrestleMania 40, who knows what that will be. Well, guess what? We're probably going to see a lot of these stars from NXT up headlining WrestleManias and SummerSlam. So to fans that are just impatient about NXT, have a little self-awareness, because I'm sure you're, you know, maybe a little, I don't think you were too impatient 10 years ago when NXT was in its infancy. Come on, folks. Let's have some self-awareness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they have a lot of they have a lot of talent in the pipeline, and obviously by WrestleMania 40, I think we're going to end up seeing that. And of course, you know who else is going to be there? Hook. Hook is going to be there.
God help us.
I hope the main event of WrestleMania 40 is Hook versus Butch versus Madcap Moss.
Versus Veer Mahan. Versus Veer Mahan.
Nah, Veer is the special enforcer on the outside. You know? With Barry Horowitz as the guest referee.
Oh my God!
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. I mean, he's got his pipeline, you know. And you didn't even mention the girls. You didn't even mention Bayley, Sasha, Becky,
yeah.
Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, all those women that have come through there. Bianca now, Rhea. You know, he's got his production line. And you know, again, a lot of people are going to criticize it now, but in the next couple of years, you're going to really start to like these people that are going to come through there. So I'm absolutely looking forward to see what comes out of NXT. Professor, I'm going to switch on to this next segment here. This is a segment that I'm introducing. This is a debut segment, okay? This is bigger than the Shockmaster. This is bigger than Kane tearing off the door of the Hell in a Cell. This is bigger than all that. We will be introducing a brand-new segment to Work in the Marks called This Day in Wrestling History. So today is, let me check the old calendar, Friday, April 22nd. Friday, April 22nd. Now, that might not ring a bell to those out there. You might not remember the 22nd. Yeah, it's 2 days after some ganja holiday. But people will not remember April 22nd for many, many reasons specifically. But one reason to remember April 22nd is because of 19 years ago today, Fernando. 19 years ago today, during a live episode of Thunder from Columbia, South Carolina, Marcus Buff Bagwell was severely injured while taking a second rope bulldog during a tag team match. The incident, as explained in the May 2nd, 1998 edition of Pro Wrestling Torch, Marcus Buff Bagwell suffered a serious neck injury, spinal shock, on the April 22nd edition of Thunder. He had neck surgery on April 27th and is expected to need 8 to 12 months to recover. Chances are he will be able to wrestle again, but it is not a given. Now, during the tag team match broadcast live on TBS, Rick Steiner bulldogged Buff Bagwell off the top rope. When Rick landed ahead of Bagwell, Bagwell's head jammed into Rick's side and then turned sharply. Rick turned Bagwell over for the pin. Scott Steiner then nailed Rick on the back with a chair and dragged the knocked out Bagwell onto Rick for the pin. As Scott moved Bagwell, Bagwell was talking to him, likely telling him he was seriously injured. Scott moved too quickly in and out of the ring to pick up Bagwell and basically to hear what Buff was saying. But shortly after the pinfall, it became apparent that something was wrong. So Buff laid there for quite some time. And they brought out the stretchers and the whole nine. They took Buff out of the ring and whatnot. Scott Norton, Buff Bagwell's tag team partner in the match, and Vincent began to drag Buff out along with the attendees, the medical team. And basically, at the end of this all, everybody had found out that Buff Bagwell's neck injury was, in fact, a ruse by the NWO. Certainly one of the funnier moments in pro wrestling history, and one of the funnier angles. And Buff, when he was really kind of, you know, on top of his stuff, for lack of a better term there, Professor.
Well, you know what? That's a pretty historic day. I remember what that meant. And, you know, it's interesting, man, because, you know, today we have so much information at our disposal about professional wrestling / sports entertainment, to be fair to the fans that characterize it that way. You know, at the time, we weren't, you know, we were kind of limited, right? The internet was still in its infancy. There was no Instagram. There was no social media of any kind. We were kind of just going, you know, again, there was no YouTube. We were kind of going by, you know, ProWrestling.com and some of these websites. And we really, again, we were still trying to learn what was a work and what was a shoot. And, you know, when you watch that live, you were concerned, and rightfully so. And to sort of add on top of Buff Bagwell, it's a shame what's happened to him. Obviously, I know that there's been an outcry for perhaps Diamond Dallas Page to take him in and try to do some wonders with Buff Bagwell, the way he did with Scott Hall, God rest his soul, with Jake the Snake Roberts, with others that have been struggling with substance abuse and other disorders. So it's I mean, talk about a guy that was really, really pushed in the late 90s in WCW, but just never caught on with Vince. It's a shame.
He also did softcore porn as well. He was on a Skinamax softcore porn back in the day. So Buff was he was spreading it all over. He was spreading the stuff all over.
That's
but
for
yeah,
sure.
I mean, Buff had a lot of potential, you know, and definitely, you know, was a guy that, like, you kind of look at him and you're like, gee, I wonder why this guy wasn't more, you know, because he could talk, he had a look. He was a part of the American Males, had a sweet mullet back in the day. But for whatever reason, you know, Buff just really couldn't really catch on in his time in WWE. Moving on, Professor, it is now time for our main event of the episode. Professor, I feel like, you know, you're the guy that has to introduce it. Plus, I'm a bumbling fucking idiot this whole episode. So introduce our main topic.
It's a topic that really continues to generate debate, and I think in recent years, because of social media, because of really the boom of so many podcasts by former pro wrestlers, former talent, evaluators, bookers, you know, whatever other profession I can think of. You know, what's the big deal with name changes? Why is it such a polarizing issue for fans? And I got to say, you know, I'm one of those fans that sometimes doesn't get the whole name change that it seems like Vince McMahon is very insistent on. I know from a legal perspective what it means for Vince, and from a marketing perspective, yes, it's something that is, you know, money-driven for Vince. But at the same time, and I think it even applies even to pay-per-views and events. I know maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but, you know, coming up next month, right, for years we always knew that the pay-per-view after WrestleMania, again, when we were pretty much subjugated to monthly pay-per-views, which started, again, only in 95, really, I believe. You know, In Your House debuted in May of 95. So it wasn't exactly after Mania, but pretty much from that point on, whether it was WCW or WWF / WWE, you know, we got used to monthly pay-per-views, and we always looked at the pay-per-view after Mania as Backlash. That's it. And now it's WrestleMania Backlash, and some fans are resistant to it, whether it's that, whether it's the fact of, you know, renaming other pay-per-views that we were so used to watching at certain intervals of the year. But more so, I think the outcry right now is about renaming talent. And we look at last week, LA Knight, who done a pretty good job at NXT for the year and a half that he's been there, right? After he left Impact, you know, Eli Drake, for us Impact fans who love that guy. You know, last week what happened? He decided to, Vince decided to call him up to SmackDown. I believe before the show went on the air, I think it was a pre-match, introduced him, and as well as, you know, bringing other guys into a stable. We've seen the outcry about Walter being changed to Gunther, Pete Dunne being changed to Butch. I don't know, man. I think a lot of fans get very fickle about Vince wanting to change names because we've been, you know, and as fans, we've been used to a guy a certain way, a guy with a certain music even, you know. For example, I know you may not agree, but Tommaso Ciampa's theme is one of the more over themes in WWE. I get it. It's for that audience. But sometimes you bring up guys and girls, you change their look or their names, and fans get a little resistant to it. And I think that's kind of picking up steam now online. Vince doesn't care. Vince is being a businessman. But I think for a lot of fans, they're still struggling, Pat, with name changes. And to them, it's a big deal.
It's so stupid. And I just feel like it's another thing that marks have to fucking cry about and complain about and bellyache about constantly online or when you talk to them. I think in some cases, these name changes, these on-screen role changes are actually really good. It's really good for some of these guys. Let's take the aforementioned Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne, great wrestler, fantastic wrestler. A guy that, you know, had a little bit of baby fat in him early on in his time in NXT, really trimmed down, got super lean, got cut up, you know, added a little size to himself, but didn't really have any personality. Outside of him, you know, doing the Marty Scurll finger break thing and all that other stuff and his wrestling style in general, which again is good, his character work just was lacking. He really didn't have anything. I'd say probably his best stuff in NXT was his time with Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle brought out a whole side of him that I thought was really different, was interesting. He gave him a gimmick. He had a gimmick finally. He had something to do instead of just being a good wrestler. And I think we've learned from the past that, you know, we've had a lot of great wrestlers throughout the years, but if you don't have a gimmick, if you don't have a character, if you don't have something that helps you get over, you're just going to kind of float in and out, and you're not going to really achieve the potential that you have. One guy I could think of, for example, is Lance Storm. Lance Storm never really had a great gimmick that could help him get over. Yeah, he could get over with the indie audience, with the ECW crowd, but, you know, on that grander scale, he just couldn't really catch on because he didn't have much personality. Pete Dunne right now is Butch. Is probably the most entertaining he's ever been. And I know some people might think that's sacrilege given his wrestling ability, but I got to be honest. I mean, the segments are fantastic, the way they've designed them. You know, he's in that Peaky Blinders stable. You know, he's doing that. I mean, and look, and that's hit or miss with some people. Some people like it. Some people don't. I like Sheamus. I think he's a good worker. The other guy, you know, it's a shame what happened with him, but, you know, he's a guy that has potential, you know. And I don't want people out there blaming Ridge Holland for what happened with Big E. That happened. The grip was wrong. Things happen in wrestling. It just, you know, it is what it is. You know, D'Lo Brown isn't any less of a wrestler because of what happened with Darren Drozdov. Other wrestlers who have hurt other wrestlers are not less of a wrestler because of that. So, you know, fans need to get that out of their mind and not blame anybody for that, because accidents do happen in wrestling, just like anything else. You know, Walter, right? Gunther. Everybody, oh, God, Walter Gunther, it doesn't matter what his name is. The guy is going to get over. The presentation will get over. You know what I'm saying? You can name him Fulanito de Tal, and you can make him Cuban and draw a fucking mustache on his face with a birthmark, and dude is going to get over because of that style, and people will buy into it because it's been proven that the WWF audience buys into Cuban characters, okay? But the point being is that this is something else for him. They put the red coat on him. Now he looks evil. Now he looks menacing. Now this guy's more of an action figure than he ever was. Still a fantastic wrestler. His style is not hindered whatsoever. Eli Drake, they pair him up with what, Mace? The guy was wearing a plate on his face as part of the stable that had potential that kind of fizzled out for various reasons. He can't really talk. He's got size to him. He can hit his shots hard. You know, he's believable. Give him a mouthpiece. Who says that Eli Drake is going to be a manager that entire time that he's there? And why is that a problem? He's using one of his greatest assets as a worker, which is his talking ability. You know? So, again, like, a lot of these cases, you see it, and it's really not a problem. You know, same thing with Austin Theory. Oh, now he's Theory. Well, then fucking call him Theory. Call him Austin. Call him Bilbo Baggins. He's going to get over. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The talent is there. The ability is there. And most of the time,
people call these guys by their name. You know, nobody says Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Nobody says Hulk Hogan. People call him Hogan most of the time, right? People say Savage.
Correct.
People say Hart. People say Michaels. People say Austin. Austin 316. It wasn't Stone Cold Steve Austin 316. So, again, these are examples of marketing. These are examples of them, you know, utilizing their knowledge, utilizing, you know, their staff that they have available to them, and giving these guys more personality than just being a good wrestler. And I think that fans should perhaps try and look at it that way and see how it pans out instead of just having this crazy reaction right out the gate. Let's see where this goes, because right now, I mean, unless, you know, I guess you don't like any of this stuff, or you're just so anti-WWE, you can't honestly tell me that the stuff that they've been doing with Pete Dunne hasn't been good for the most part and hasn't been more character-wise than some of the stuff that he's done throughout his entire career thus far in WWE.
Oh, no, absolutely. Listen, Pete Dunne has been a guy who's been a solid worker. Again, not really great on the mic per se. Not a guy that's ever been allowed to have a personality per se. And what he's done is
even that statement, I'm sorry, just not to cut you off there, but even that statement, allowed to have a personality. He's allowed to have a personality. They are allowed to have personalities. They're given a gimmick and they got to work the gimmick. And again, that's more of the fan misconceptions. They act like WWE is like this super rigid, regimented thing where it's like, no, you can't smile. You can't do this. You can't do that. Yeah, there's certain things that they'll tell you that are in regards to your character that they'll have you do, but they're not, you know, forbidding you to do anything like other than basically moves that are going to fuck you up. You know what I mean? But continue. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, I hear this stuff all the time.
No, you're right. And I think that whether it's wrestlers like Pete Dunne and others, I mean, obviously – changing their gimmick to some extent, changing their attire, their name. Sometimes fans are just resistant to that. And whether it's that specific dynamic or changing music, changing the presentation. I mean, listen, to your point about Walter or Gunther, I mean, listen, what better way to make this guy look more menacing than, okay, yeah, he came out to the ring in the Ring General long black jacket. Well, now he comes out looking like an Imperial Guardsman from, you know, the Emperor, Return of the Jedi. I mean, that's a different look, but it accomplishes what it's supposed to. And I think sometimes fans are very resistant to, they're used to a guy or a girl a certain way, and now you're changing them up, and fans get, you know, very fickle. And listen, Vince has been doing this for years to different people. Vince has been smart as a businessman, because I think you and I have talked off the air about this. At the end of the day, their name is their name. It's not like Vince cannot own an intellectual property against someone's legal name. However, if Vince wants to copyright or patent different names for his own purposes, for merchandising sales, for, again, content, he can do that. And that's smart of Vince. Has every promoter done that? I'm sure at some point in time some promoters have done that, but Vince has been, again, ahead of the curve for years on this. When it comes to licensing, when it comes to copyright, Vince has just been smart about it. Fans may not like it, but that's being a good businessman. And, you know, folks, I've said this before on this episode, on this show, excuse me, in previous episodes, you know, for a body of work, 95% of the time, Vince has gotten it right. He's done good business. He's done good wrestling. He's done good production. He's done good presentation. The 5% that we might disagree with Vince, I think, is predicated on our fandom. Maybe we don't like the way he's booked a certain pay-per-view. Maybe we don't like the way he's booked a certain guys or girls in the ring and the win-loss results. But 95% of the time, Vince has done it right, because to your point about Butch and others, it's going to sell merch. It's going to get traffic online. It's going to get social media views. I mean, let's be honest. How many people were sharing that video of Pete Dunne jumping across the table to jump Xavier Woods? That was hysterical. When it happened, you had to look and say, oh, my God, wow. Like, that's hysterical. That was crazy. You hadn't seen that at wrestling in some time. And guess what? I don't know what the number is per se, but that was shared on Twitter. that was shared on Instagram, that was shared on TikTok. I mean, Pete Dunne just lunged across the table. That was funny. And, you know, hey, that's what's going to get an audience. Again, Vince is not just catering to fans like myself. He's catering to fans that are going to drive social media. You know, hey, didn't we see that meme a couple of weeks ago that WrestleMania got more views and traffic than the Super Bowl? Well, maybe it's not a fair comparison since one's a global entity as opposed to one being a more continental entity, but that's what Vince is driving by. Vince is driving by the fact that social media views matter. Traffic on all these platforms matter. And I think that also escapes a lot of fans, the marks especially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and look, we're not even considering like the rage tweets because, you know, people are throwing hashtags in there or they're tagging the company. So, I mean, the negative interaction, I'm sure, outweighs the positive interaction. But yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, they make these clips, you know, that go viral, that, you know, and then from there it becomes a GIF or a GIF, whatever you want to call it. And then now all of a sudden people who don't even watch wrestling are sending it to each other because it's hilarious. And, I mean, you know, if anything, I think that just proves that Vince is still very much ahead of the game in regards to this stuff. And he knows what to do and how to do it to make, you know, these characters a lot more mainstream and a lot of the stuff that they do way more mainstream, you know?
It's amazing,
you know,
to
yeah.
me. Yeah. No, it's amazing to me that I think fans still don't – it's – I don't know, maybe as we've gotten older and maybe it's been social media and or the internet or these dirt sheets or these supposed wrestling journalists, I think it's clouded the mindsets of a lot of fans to where there's a way to look at this stuff logically. I know it's weird to say looking at pro wrestling logically where it's almost like an oxymoron or a paradox per se, excuse me. But I think there's a way to look at this where we can be fans, but also be realistic and also be objective. And I think a lot of fans are struggling with this. Not our fans, because we got some smart fans on this show, but I think a lot of fans out there that are marks, hardcore marks, and even delusional marks, I'm sorry to use that hateful term, I think fail to comprehend, I think, some simple business practices when it's right in front of their face.
Absolutely. The other thing, too, that I think we don't consider is the fact of how people interact with WWE-like programming. You know what I mean? We're not taking YouTube into account, you know, because there's people that don't even sit there and watch 3 hours of Raw. Maybe some people might call them smart. Maybe some people might call them, smart. But for the most part, you know, I mean, there's people that watch it on YouTube and watch these short 15-minute clips. And WWE does that by design to get people interested in the bigger shows. So that way, when they get to their WrestleManias or when they get to their WrestleMania Backlash, you know, they make the show a lot bigger than what it is. And look, a lot of people like that right there, WrestleMania Backlash, people will throw a tantrum about that. Oh, it's Backlash. And it's, okay, that's fine. But that's the past. And calling it WrestleMania Backlash now increases the importance of it to people that didn't grow up watching Backlash. You know what I mean? So it's different ways that Vince is getting to his audience. And little things like this is what Tony Khan could really learn from. You know, Tony Khan, I'll say this, this is on record. Tony Khan is a good matchmaker. He comes up with some pretty good matches for the most part, right? We're still, you know, let's see what happens with this New Japan show, but Tony Khan could at least do that. As far as it goes with being a booker, putting together content, you know, making his product more visible, he's really, really lacking still there. And Vince has not only invented the book on it, but Vince is now reinventing the new version where now he's basically telling people how to use YouTube to get their product out there, how to use social media to get their product out there, you know, and all of that just gains more and more fan interaction. So, I mean, yeah, you know, you're pleasing the however many million viewers, but now globally people are reacting with this, you know, in much greater numbers. And, you know, it's just different ways for him to get the product more visible. And, you know, people might not like it, but
That's what it is. So whether he gets it through the negative comments of Marx and the crybaby nonsense or the people that actually pay it and enjoy and watch it, he's going to get it one way or another. You know what I mean? So I think it's just best to see how this all plays out. And let's not act also like these aren't the first wrestlers that were like good wrestlers or that were wrestlers that were known on the indies or wrestlers that, you know, were known, you know, in Japan or around the world, you know, these globally respected guys that were given a gimmick in WWE. I mean, there's plenty of guys that did that. There's plenty of guys that ended up doing gimmick stuff there. So, I mean, when the program is centered around that, these are the things that are going to happen. So give it time, fans. Let it marinate. Let's see where it goes. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm not even trying to be right. I'm just saying, let's take a look at this with a different pair of glasses.
I'm with you, bro. I'm with you. And I think that's part of the problem that's been ongoing for some years. And listen, I'd be a hypocrite or I'd be sort of cutting my nose to spite my face with, hey, you know, it's because of the internet and social media that fans have become so rambunctious and rebellious or just outright defiant about pro wrestling and calling out Vince and calling out all these promoters. At the end of the day, listen, we're benefiting from having these platforms where we can express our opinions, but at the same time, man, it's a perpetual reminder of the toxicity that is the fandom of pro wrestling. There is no more toxic fan base on this planet than professional wrestling fans, not soccer fans, not fans of the NFL, not fans of Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, NASCAR, MLS. I mean, you name it. I mean, the most toxic fan base in all of any form of entertainment has to be pro wrestling fans. And unfortunately, you know, with having social media, everyone literally having a voice within reach of their smartphone, right? Having an iPhone or for those out there that, you know, like their flip phones and green text, hey, you know, everyone feels they have a voice now. Well, guess what? Just because you have a voice doesn't mean it's the right voice or it's the correct voice. And I think fans still struggle with that, Pat. And I think that's, again, it contributes to the toxicity that, you know, we denounce every time we do this show.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually heard an interesting quote this week from Billy Boddy, who is pretty much the most reliable news source you're going to get out there, folks. Like, don't turn to Meltzer or any of those other guys or Joey, Bobby, Nikki, AJ, Justin, Tito, LaToya, Marlon, Jermaine, whatever that show is. Don't listen to those guys. Billy Boddy's the guy to listen to. And Billy Boddy was talking about how, a lot of the way that they gear the stuff, again, it's geared to get a certain reaction. It's geared to do a certain thing. And fans might not like it, but in the long run, it's going to work out. You know what I mean? And John Cena, again, he's a guy that's proof of that, you know, and a lot of other guys. So, I think we just need to let it play out and, you know, let's see what happens with all this stuff, you know, instead of, like I said, criticizing it.
I'm with you, man. Again, it's we love watching wrestling. It's something that is a passion. It's a pastime for us. We enjoy talking about it, obviously, on this show. I think we're really good at it, certainly.
But it's shitty. Let's be honest. Let's be intellectually honest. It's shitty because look, it's low on the sports scale. It's the lowest on the sports scale, and it's the lowest on the entertainment scale. So I think we all have to be intellectually honest that we're all a little fucked up if we're actually not only watching but arguing about grown men and women in their underwear pretend fighting. Wouldn't you say?
That is right. Yes, that's right. We're, it's funny. We're getting our panties all in a bunch about guys and girls wrestling in their underwear, essentially. So if people don't see the irony in that, I think it's, well, then I don't know what to tell you, folks. I think then, again, I'm not a clinician, but you might be beyond help at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I just think we just need to realize it again for what it is and not get so like wound up about the stuff. But I think that's what kind of unites us. And I think that's what kind of binds us. And again, you know, in regards to WWE, AEW, whatever the programming is, folks, watch what you like. Watch what you like. If you like all of it, watch it. If you want to watch it to criticize it, watch it to criticize it. But don't get toxic. Don't threaten to fight people, or don't fight people, or you know, don't abuse people online because of wrestling. It's stupid. It's really, really stupid, okay? Just enjoy what you like and stop being an asshole. That's basically it. As we continue doing our show where we talk shit about wrestling and its fans.
That's right. I'll tell you, folks, the irony is not lost here on our great audience, folks. The irony is not lost here, folks.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I think that's about it for Off-Air. I think we covered just about everything, and I feel like 1 minute more would just be too much for these people. So I think it's time. It's time.
Yeah. I would say, but real quick before we close out the show for today, folks, again, some good stuff going on in the tri-state area early May next week. Here, obviously, in Morristown, we got the 80s WrestleCon coming up. So for all you fans that are, again, that just love your nostalgia and are looking to go to meet and greets with pro wrestlers, they include J.J. Dillon, Barry Windham, other stars from the 1980s, the WrestleCon in Morristown is going to be something you don't want to miss next weekend. Obviously, that's going to be worth going to for anyone who loves those meet and greets. You got Saturday night's main event emanating from and being filmed at the Cure Insurance Arena in Trenton. I don't know, man, as the weather's getting warmer, it's nicer to be outside. And for fans that want to go to these things that now we can go to, obviously after this pandemic, check it out. You might see me there. You'll definitely see me there next weekend. In Morristown at the WrestleCon. So if you see me, come up and say hi and tell me how much you like the show, or wait, maybe you don't like the show. But again, for all you wrestling fans out there, check out 80s WrestleCon next weekend in Morristown, New Jersey.
Look at that. Tommy Fierro should give you free entrance for that.
I'll hit him up. I'm going to hit him up for that, that's for sure.
Definitely a lot of good stuff. Shout out to Tommy Fierro and ISPW. Tommy's a great guy. Knew him from back in the JCW days in the early 2000s. Definitely, man. Get out, man. Continue to support wrestling any way you can, any way you like, you know. And again, watch what you like, folks. I got a couple of things to plug here. So we definitely want to plug the Working the Marks Facebook page. Had we mentioned it before? I don't know. I think
we have mentioned it, but you know, I believe there's a new page now, and a shout out to David Gregory Karsh, who is
show. No government. D-Rotten, all right?
Oh, my bad, Dave. Sorry. Okay, my bad, bro. Okay, kudos to him, and we appreciate everything he's doing to help increase the viewership of this show and certainly to help this brand. So we're eternally grateful for his due diligence and hard work here.
Yeah, man. And, you know, check out D-Rotten, man. Also check out From the Dungeon podcast, which I used to co-host with D back in the day. I've got a lot of the great local artists here in Hudson County and also across the country. Also, check out our Apple page. We're on Apple now.
That's right.
We're on Podcast Addict. So we're kind of spreading the Working the Marks brand. We're kind of getting it out there for everybody to enjoy. And I also want to plug the triumphant return, the stupendous return of the child actors to the performance stage. We will be coming back to you with Music Mania 22. That's right, folks. Music Mania 22 on May 14th, Saturday, May 14th, 2022 at Crave 43. That's 120 43rd Street in Union City. And performances start out at 9 p.m. We're going to have Pellagra, Sway El Loco, the child actors, and Kiboidi. Tickets are $10 in advance and $15 at the door. So, folks, come on out if you want to check out some great artists here in the Northeast. And come on out to see the child actors. Come on out, have a wrestling debate with me. Maybe, you know, I'll sign your girlfriend's breasts or something. I don't know. We'll take it from there. But, folks, you definitely don't want to miss the child actors coming back to the stage. Profe, I leave it with you, my man.
Hey, listen, definitely go check out that show. It's worth it. I've seen Patrick perform in person, and I had the privilege of that right before the pandemic at a great spot in the Jersey City Heights. It was kind of weird because I went dressed for a Tinder date and I looked like a drug dealer with my suit on. And I think five people approached me in the bathroom asking me if I was selling coke because I looked like a coke dealer. So I think I'll have to change my attire when I go see Patrick perform from now on so I don't get approached by people. But
you should get a good romper. Well, get a cowboy's romper.
Go.
I could see you in that, a cowboy's romper, you know?
I could do that. I could do that for sure. Definitely. But, folks, he's worth checking out in person. And to our fans, obviously, listen, as April's coming to a close, May's right around the corner. Folks, it's weather's getting warmer. Get outside. Get some fresh air. Get some exercise. And more importantly, when you're doing all that, always tune in to Working the Marks on Blog Talk Radio and on Apple Podcasts.
All right, folks. He is Professor Fernando Uribe. I am the PR superstar, Patrick Rivera. And we are Working the Marks. Take it easy, folks. Catch you next time. Thank you.